Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast. I'm Ollie Lum and as always I'm joined by my co-host Matt Seddon. This is episode 24, so we're getting close to our big milestone of 25 episodes, and our guest this week for the podcast is Steph Davis. Steph has a marathon PB of 2:27, and just over 4 weeks ago she booked her place to Tokyo by winning the trials in Kew Gardens.
Enjoy. Another great pod today. Finally, we have our first Olympian on the podcast. Okay, she's Tokyo bound. Steph, you know, we cover all bases. Start from the beginning, basically. Her first marathon just 3 years ago, and now she's already going to Tokyo. So never write yourself off. So that's a super interesting progression of how her career has now got to this point at the elite level of the sport. You know, we speak to her about her training methods as well. Quite keen on cross-training, does a lot of cross-training. She puts a lot of her success down to that. So that was interesting. And then we cover, you know, your basics like your diet, your nutrition, her training group, coaching relationship, and all stuff like that. So a real in detail pod from Steph, and she's had a little bit of time now to reflect the trials. So we obviously talk about the race itself and how that went down. So enjoy. Also, just quickly, I want to give a shout out to Luke Gunn and Birmingham for putting on a cracker meet Wednesday night. If you're listening, you've probably seen and heard all about it. If you haven't, go check it out. I think you can watch it back on YouTube or on the, if you go to the Birmingham track Instagram or Birmingham Uni Instagram, you can watch it back. You know, Johnny D looked really impressive, 7:53 for 3K, but a 26 last 200. Phil Norman showing that he's going to fight for his Olympic spot, and probably looks like he's going to get this Olympic qualifying time. Goes and runs 5:26.0. Alex Bell looking in fine form as well. She gets a win. So some cracking races went down. The atmosphere was great. I was there, I PB'd, so I'm probably being a bit biased here, but as soon as crowds open up and we can start going to watch this meet, I recommend you all go. So, but yeah, just a quick shout out for them, and track is back. So expect a lot more talk on the podcast. Hopefully soon we can start talking about a lot more races, a lot more race results, and, you know, get athletes on who are competing week in, week out, and we can, you know, talk a little bit more with them about their plans for the summer and stuff. So yeah, exciting times. Go out, enjoy your long run, and we'll catch you next week.
Well, yeah, first off, welcome to the podcast, and just congratulations, I guess, on booking your place to the Olympics. How's the last few weeks been since the trials?
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy. It's been super busy with yeah, just stuff going on, lots of media stuff since then, which I'm definitely not used to, but really exciting. I think when the official team was announced as well, that was like a great way to kind of finalize it and make it feel a bit more real. Before that, it was a bit surreal. I was like, is this actually happening?
Yeah, 100%. We actually wanted to ask, like, was there a point during the race where it sunk in or not until afterwards, I guess?
No, like, even when people were telling me around the course that I had a lead, I still, with the marathon, anything can happen. So I didn't want to be thinking in my head, oh, I've got this, until I'd like officially crossed the line. And it was, yeah, like 100%. I wasn't really aware either, although time didn't matter for me because I already had the qualifying time from Valencia in 2019. I wasn't really aware of like the time either. So it was just a case of kind of thinking about that kind of top two spots and getting to the finish line to secure that. So yeah, until I crossed the line, and even once I crossed the line, I think I was still a bit like, what? Like, what just happened? Because I played through different scenarios in my mind going into the race. So I was kind of prepared, like, mentally. And that scenario, I hadn't really played out. I did not think I would win with such a lead like that. But it was great.
Well, going into it, Steph, like the week leading up and stuff, there was a few, like Purdue and stuff announced they weren't going to do it. Jess announced she wasn't going to do it. What was sort of going through your head then? Were you starting to think, oh, okay, my chances are getting a bit bigger now? Or were you just sort of sticking to your guns, sticking to your task?
I kind of just stuck to the task. I mean, the objective hadn't changed, even though, yeah, like the three girls that already had the qualifying time ahead of me weren't going to be there. It still didn't change the objective for me. I still had to finish top two. And I had no idea how everyone else's training had gone. Like, we don't know anyone's form because no one's had the opportunity to race. So I kind of, at that point, kind of ignored all the social media stuff, the reviews that were taken before the race, because I knew that I was going to be the fastest on paper and people were probably going to say that, yeah, I had a good chance. But anything can happen on the day. I mean, so I still wanted to stay grounded and kind of focus on, yeah, on that top two.
Did you prefer having a trials race compared to just going into an ordinary London marathon? Is that something you were looking forward to, or were you thinking, oh, I would actually prefer a London marathon here where I can just race flat out?
I think, yeah, I mean, the London marathon for the females would have been a separate race. Anyway, we would have started ahead of the men and the masses. So although we would have had athletes from other countries and, of course, the crowds, it was still, I'd still prepared myself that it was going to be a very different race from what I was used to, because all the other marathons I'd done had been in mass fields. So like Berlin, Valencia, London had all been like in big crowds, mixed races. So I'd always prepared myself that it was going to be a lonely race. And then obviously with COVID, it was going to be even quieter because it was just the British female athletes. But I really enjoyed the format. I think, yeah, I mean, I can say that because it went well for me. I mean, if it hadn't gone well, maybe I would be saying, oh, the crowds would have helped and more people would have helped. But I think I was fortunate enough that I had the pacers there as well. I mean, Kevin and Josh were great. So, yeah, I think a trials like that is, I guess it's kind of what the Americans do as well. I think it's something they should consider going forwards. I mean, obviously incorporating London Marathon would be really fun because you would have the crowds as well. But no, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's interesting to say that, because I think from a spectator perspective, we were really excited seeing a trials race. You mentioned the pacemakers there. What are your kind of thoughts on the use of pacemakers in a trials? Is that something you think should continue going forward? Or do you think maybe it's more championship style without them?
I think it's definitely useful to have them maybe for the qualifying time. Obviously we were fortunate enough at Q that we had three groups of pacers. So there was one in my group, which was for 2:28, and then there was the 2:29:30, and then there was the Commonwealth Standard as well. So it was a pace group for that. I think if there'd been more females involved in the race, if we didn't have a kind of curfew on COVID, and we could have had, I mean, in the end, we were only had about, I think, 16 athletes or something lined up, whereas we were meant to even have 30. So that would have increased the field a bit. I think if we'd had more runners, then maybe the need for pacers wouldn't be there. But when it's such a quiet race, just having extra bodies helps kind of push it on. So maybe if it was going to be a trials race going forwards, and hopefully COVID won't be here next year or 4 years, 3 years time, they could have more female athletes taking place to kind of boost those numbers and then make it more of a race format, because I think that would be fun. I mean, I would have been interested to see how I would have gone if it was had been more of a race with more athletes there to kind of push you on or push the pace.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, were you the one who requested the pace? Because rumor has it, I thought you were. And at any point in the race, were you saying to Josh, can we pick it up a little bit? Can we go a bit harder? Can we try and drop him? I was just interested to see like if you actually spoke to Josh, you know, during the race at all at any point to make him go a little bit further as well.
So beforehand, I hadn't really got involved. I'd spoken to my coach and I just left it to him to speak to the race organizers. Right. I mean, he knew my training and what I was capable of. So I just left it to him and was told what we had on the day and worked with that. I mean, the 74, going through time halfway in 74 was fine for me. If it had been a little bit quicker, I think I would have been okay with that too. So yeah, I didn't really get involved with the pre-race discussions, but during the race, no, like when we went through halfway, we were bang on, and we went through in 74.05 and we're meant to go through in 74. So the pacers were spot on. Yeah. And then when the group kind of split away and ended up just being me and the pacers, there was no discussion to say, oh, can you push it? Can you push it? Josh and Kevin kind of checked in to say, is this okay? How are you feeling? But only a couple of times. And it was just a case of, I think once, especially it was just Josh and I. Well, when Kevin dropped out at 30k, I'll rewind a bit. I did say to Josh, if you could do another lap, I'd be really grateful. And he had said at that point he was feeling okay. He could continue. And then he did continue up until the last lap. So
yeah,
thanks so much to Josh. But it was, I think, just a case of we didn't actually get quicker. But I think because it was just Josh and I was sitting behind him, he could probably maybe feel me on his heels. So naturally got a bit quicker. A few seconds every kilometre kind of thing. But no, there was no discussion to say, can you pick it up to X pace? Because I didn't really know at that point. My brain wasn't fully on maths mode. I didn't get to work out maths.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I wonder what point in the marathon you sort of forget about splits and you're just like, right, just keep putting one foot in front of the other.
Yeah, because usually the marathons I've done in the past, it's been all about time for me. Yeah. I've not been had to think about position. So I've had like my 5K splits, like especially when I was doing Valencia, I knew I wanted to kind of go for that Olympic qualifying time. I had my 5K splits written down. So I was really in tune with where I should be. Yeah. Whereas at this race, I knew what pace I should be doing for Olympic qualifying time, even though I had it and that wasn't a goal or wasn't a primary goal. I still wanted to prove to myself that I could run it again. And I knew from training that I could. So I had in my mind that that was what I would ideally like to cross the line in sub 2:29.30. So I knew what average pace I needed to be doing for that. But apart from that, I wasn't thinking, all right, to get a PB, I need to be doing this. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until the last rough about 500 meters, we came through that kind of last home straight and there was a big clock and I was like, oh, I'm actually really close to my PB. Get my skates on.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, shaved like 20 seconds off my time. So.
Yeah, I know. Congrats. It was good, you know, going into knowing you're in your best shape going into the Olympics as well. It's interesting because obviously you had Josh there and it just kept you going. As the men's race, you saw the complete opposite. The pace has dropped out and then Tomo's just come right on him, hasn't he? So, yeah, it was good to see sort of both races play out differently.
Yeah, it was interesting with Tomo as well because I was listening back at the coverage and they were saying, oh, he looks like he's faded. It's not going to happen for him. But actually, he'd said, like, thought to himself, like, I know what I'm doing here. This pace is too hard, too soon. Yeah. I'm going to rein it in. And then just picked it up and picked it up. And
yes, yeah, so he said something you might relate to. He said he did the first lap, you know, ran the turns, did the first lap and said, oh, these guys aren't going to be able to pick this pace up. Did anything like that cross your mind during the race at all? You know, after you familiarized yourself with that first lap, were you like, okay, this pace is fine or I should ease back at all?
The pace felt fine. I was conscious of not making a move too soon, probably like Tomo was actually.
Yeah.
Because yeah, I didn't want to kind of try and push it on and then have to pay for it later, especially when I didn't need to. So I was more conscious though. We were actually sitting a few meters off the pacers at one point. So I was more thinking like, should I even close this little gap and sit right on the back of the pacers or should I just stay here on the front of the group? And on that windy section, that probably wasn't like the best tactic when we had that gap between the pacers because I was probably holding the wind in a bit, being the shield. But eventually that gap did, my coach was shouting me every lap, like, come on, push it, get on their heels. And at some point I did, and I think when the men's race passed us up in the top corner, we all naturally had to come into single file. And at that point, I got right on the back of the pacers and then everyone formed behind. And I think when the men then passed us and we were able to regroup, the group didn't quite form the way it had before we had to go into single file. So naturally, I think that's when it started to splinter. I didn't really, I could still feel some people behind me, but I wasn't really kind of clocking into who that was. It was more just focusing on, yeah, just sitting behind and following the lead. Like it would have been interesting, yeah, if maybe the pacers hadn't been there and there was other girls pushing on the pace, or I was going to have to be the one responsible for that. It would be interesting to see what would have played out. I think, yeah, having the pacers here definitely changes the dynamic of the race.
Yeah. No, it's interesting you say about kind of, you didn't really have to think about the time too much because you already had it. You mentioned the wanting to run under 2:29:30, I think, anyway. How different was your build-up, or is it pretty similar like to what you normally do in a race? Did you think more in the build-up in terms of the sessions you did? Were they more about racing, or was it still a similar build-up to you would for just running for a time?
So the types of sessions and the format was largely the same. Because of COVID, my other half and I had based ourselves up in North Yorkshire at his family home, just because we had more space there compared to our tiny little flat in London. So the format of my training was slightly different in that I wasn't training with the group that I always train with. I mean, we wouldn't be allowed to anyway because of the number of restrictions. But I was then doing some more training on my own, or often my other half does train with me sometimes, but he does a lot less mileage than I do. He's a triathlete. So he'd maybe start me off at sessions and I'd have to then finish them on my own. And I was getting used to like different terrain. It was a lot hillier there. Here in London, we do all our kind of sessions, or speed sessions or tempo sessions, that kind of thing, round the same loop. It's Battersea Park. I mean, for those who don't know, it's super flat. It's around about 3K. So actually quite a similar distance to that of the trials. But I think the different format in my training, especially having to train on my own, was actually a really good thing for me then going into the trials, because it prepared me for like a quieter race. I'm probably used to, in the previous builds for Valencia and London, just kind of being in that little training bubble, getting pulled along by the other people that I train with, whereas this time I had to kind of actively think about my pacing and my splits when I was out training and really get in tune with it myself. So I think, although that was something to get used to, especially at the start of training, it was probably quite good for me in hindsight. I think that's something that, even if I'm back in London, I should implement some more solo sessions into my training, as much as I love training with the group, but just to kind of, I guess, like toughen myself up a bit mentally and also like physically as well, get in tune with how it will feel if you're on your own and it really hurts. Because you can't rely on other people to maybe stick on their tail, and that could happen definitely in the Olympics. I could end up running on my own, so I need to be prepared for that, and it's about practicing that in training. A build this time felt a bit shorter. I'd had an ITB injury from the end of last year, so I was still easing back into running when I really should have been like fully starting marathon training. I was still doing like walk runs and thinking, oh my goodness, like weeks are ticking on, I'm running out of time. But I think I'd worked so hard on the cross training while I was injured that my fitness carried through into the training. So I just surprised myself like how little running fitness I'd lost from just doing some really hard sessions on the bike.
Yeah, let's talk about the cross training. Is that something you now, because that was mentioned quite a lot when you race, especially after it came out, you know, you do a lot of cross training. Is that something you'll continue to Tokyo, or because you can run more now, like you say, you're not quite as banged up, will you just revert back to running more?
I definitely won't be taking any risks going into this block. I need to be on that plane. I do not want to be getting injured. So we'll just be following the same format. I won't be experimenting with additional miles now. I just think it would be too risky and not enough time really. So I've actually done, this morning I did my first run back since the marathon. Wow. I was like, oh my gosh, like how did I run a 2:27 marathon a couple of weeks ago? 4K feels so hard. So I think, yeah, I've taken quite a long, like we chose to do a long recovery so that my body can really be ready for this next training block. But yeah, it will still be the same format. My mileage will be relatively low, I guess, compared to others, but I mean, not compared to the average runners. People who, yeah, it's just the cross training works for me as my recovery sessions. It's kind of takes the impact off, helps me recover a bit better, but I still get that aerobic benefit. So yeah, we'll still be doing that. But now the gyms are open, I'll go back to maybe using the elliptical trainer, because when the gyms were closed, I was doing everything in the garage on the turbo. So at least I'll have a bit of change of scenery.
Mental gains. I think a few listeners will just want to know, the race was at 8 a.m., wasn't it? So I just want to know, like, what your, and I think Tokyo is going to be at 7 a.m. as well. So what do you, you're preparing for a marathon. What do you do? What time did you wake up? What did you eat beforehand? You know, what, just over time or, how did you prepare for that?
So really had to, I was focusing on trying to get to bed early and getting up earlier. My other half is definitely more of a night owl, so that was fun. I was like, nagging away the whole time, like, we need to go to bed. But we did get in quite a good routine, and we'll do that the same for Japan. Try and kind of get up to do early morning training. We're hoping to get away as well for a month in June to do some like warmer weather training, because it will be hotter there than we're used to. So we definitely can't practice that here. I mean, it's still like 7 degrees or something crazy low for this time of year. So yeah, we'll go away. So that will be nice as well. We're hoping to get out to Mallorca to train. So that's the plan. But yeah, it's all about, you have to think about all those things in the build-up and not just kind of the week before adjusting your body clock. And I guess we'll have the time difference as well to kind of battle with. But we'll fly out, I'm not exactly sure when we'll fly out, but a couple of weeks before to kind of adjust to the new time zone as well. So yeah, definitely factor that in, practice all my nutrition and stuff as well in training. Although I struggled a little bit on the race day at Q with the nutrition. Usually I have quite a tough tummy, don't really have any issues with any sort of gels or drinks, but not that aggravated it. It was just the first 3K I got a stitch, and I never get stitches, so I was like, well, this is a great start. But it did ease. But I was shouting at my coach every time I came around, like, I just need water, I don't want any of those energy drinks, because I was worried about taking something in, but then also worried if I didn't take the energy drink in, would I have enough energy? So yeah, I'd kind of added in some water and took a little bit less energy drink than I would usually do, but it was fine, my stomach settled and it didn't interfere. But it was a little panic in the first like 15 minutes of the race. I was like, oh no.
No, it's interesting you say about communicating with your coach there, because obviously it's slightly different with the Q race in terms of you had to allocate someone to have your drinks rather than them just being on a normal table. How, so was that helpful in that instance, having your coach, was it your coach handing you the bottles then?
Yeah,
being able to have that dialogue rather than just trying to grab a random drink or get some water from somewhere.
Yeah, I found it a lot easier actually taking off a physical person who I guess can kind of move with you as well as they see you coming. And Q'd organized it really well so that all the plus ones were kind of spaced out. So I knew exactly where my coach was going to be every time I came round. And yet was helpful, especially because if I was in a race and I only had my energy drinks laid out, often there's water and stuff that you can pick up, but you maybe don't have so much flexibility. And Valencia, when I ran that in December 2019, I ended up missing a few of the drink stations just because they get so crowded with people coming in at the same time. And everyone's obviously frantically trying to get their drink. So I'd missed a couple. So this time it was, just a lot more reassuring to know that I would definitely get my drink as I passed, and there was less likely to be any hiccups with that. So it was helpful just to tell them even like how I was feeling, especially if I maybe wasn't feeling so good. It would have been good just to get that extra boost. And my other half was able to come in as well. He is good friends with Nick Balker, who was pacing, so it was really nice then to have him in as well, because he was further up the field. So I'd pass my coach and he'd give him a drink, shout some words of encouragement, and then I'd go further up and see James, and he would do the same. Or at times I was saying, tell coach on the next lap, I don't want that drink, I need water. So he was then able to feed down to Phil, she wants water next time.
Could you just like discuss, I guess the importance of the fuel, and just for some of our listeners, because I guess like some of them probably have run some marathons, or maybe guys, we've got a few guys who are doing a lean marathon as well. How important is it that you could adjust it then, because fueling seems to be so topical and so important. How much were you aiming to take on in terms of gels and carbs, and then how much did that change based off like how your stomach was feeling itself?
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely learned more about nutrition with each marathon I've done. I think Berlin, my first marathon, I was probably just quite lucky. I didn't really have any plan and just took them when I felt like it. I did practice in training, but I didn't have any issues. Obviously, at that point, I wasn't an elite, so I didn't have any tables or drinks out. So I only took on water, and then I just had the gels on me. So just making sure you carry enough. And I'd always, my advice for the kind of mass runners is, when you don't have the luxury of picking up a drink or a gel at tables of your choice, then take enough on you. Often people will be thinking like, oh, this is going to be heavier, this is awkward to carry. The worst thing you want to do is be running and not have enough gels on you. Mm-hmm. Also to research and see what drink stations are going to have available, if it's a specific brand they're going to have out, and then try and practice that in training, because if that works for you in training, then that's great. You can pick up those energy drinks around the course knowing that you've tried and tested them and they don't upset your stomach. Don't test them on the day, because that could be, if you've got a sensitive tummy, or even if you don't, sometimes you just don't know. When you're running a marathon, your body's like all over the shop anyway, so don't be testing anything new. Yeah, it's just really about practicing it. This one as well, like simple things with it, caffeine gels. Like I didn't know that it took like 30 minutes for it to hit your system. I think I was just running on placebo before, like, oh, this will work. And I was taking like a caffeine gel in Valencia the last like 20 minutes of the race. That's not going to do anything. So I had help from my dietitian this time to like plan when I take my gels, and especially the caffeine ones, to get the timing right. So I think that was helpful, just to kind of get advice from her and know that kind of taking something on kind of every 30 to 40 minutes is tends to be the way to go. But yeah, taking something in the last couple of K, you're not really going to get any benefit from that. Maybe psychologically, I kind of make it a game with myself, like, oh, look, when you get to 8K, you can take your gel, yay. to kind of pass the time and make it seem not such a...
Yeah. It'll help you celebrate after, though, so you're still...
That's true.
it's good that you've got that adaptability, though. I think a lot of people may just have their set drinks, and like you say, if they get a little bit of a dodgy stomach early on in the race, they might think, I've still got to be, you know, taking on board the drinks. So it's kind of good that you were able just to relax. And I think that is the key with the marathon, just mentally just accept that you're going to have so many things come your way, like curveballs, if you like, that you just have to ride out.
Definitely.
If you're getting a stitch early, like, like you say, you would panic, and maybe it makes it worse, and then you don't know what's going to happen. But if you just stay relaxed like you did, and you can just ride it out.
Yeah, just remind yourself that like things change. I mean, I've had, yeah, like that, I got the stitch and then it was gone and everything was fine. I've had races and training sessions where I maybe felt horrendous at the start, but by the end I'm feeling really strong. So yeah, just try, and I always try and focus on another part of the body that doesn't hurt, or even if it's just like, oh, I'm swinging my arms and they feel fine, like my hand, my left pinky feels great, like whatever. Just focus on something that doesn't hurt or affect how you're feeling. So that's kind of like a mental strategy that I sometimes use, but and just remind yourself like anything can happen, anything can change, so just focus on, break it up, and don't get too stressed if something goes wrong, because
good advice. Look, Steph, we've talked about the race, let's talk about how, you know, because papers and stuff afterwards are saying, you know, you started running 3 years ago and stuff like that. I see you obviously did run, but you, to be fair, you didn't run much. You would do a few races a year, you know, 3 or 4 races a year, 5Ks, 10Ks and stuff. But when did it get serious for you? When did you start thinking, I'm going to do the marathon, and I want to focus on that? Did you ever think, I want to aim for Tokyo? Or did you just think, I want to run a marathon?
So my last marathon was, my first marathon was 3 years ago.
Yes.
So that is true. I've always been active and sporty since I was young.
Yeah.
And I joined a running club when I was around about 14, in Glasgow. It's Victoria Park. And went along kind of to the weekly like Tuesday session with my sister. And that was sparked because I did a running race at school. I came like top three and was like, oh, like I'm not so bad at this. And my dad kind of was keen for us to go along. So we went to the running club once a week, but along with playing hockey and tennis and swimming and dance. So we did like, my parents were really keen to get us involved in lots of sports so that I guess we could find what we really enjoyed. Through my school, I think I got more into the running through the summer because that was, we had to choose between athletics or tennis in the summer and I chose athletics. So that was always something that kind of I did through the summer months. And then when I went to university, again, like I had to choose a sport and I chose to do the running just because it was more flexible. I was really considering the hockey because that was something I did quite seriously at school as well. And I also competed for a club when I was at school there. So the hockey and the running were always the two things for me. But when I went to uni, I focused on the running just because it had more flexibility. I had a part-time job and obviously I was studying. So it just kind of worked better for my schedule. And through the club, kind of went to, they had like the Tuesday, Thursday format. So went to some of their sessions, but it was just based on like what I could go to around working in the bar and my studies and social life. So there was no real like structure, but I did work really hard when I went to those sessions. And then also competed for the uni in a couple of like the cross country and road races. So I love just keeping fit. And I was kind of competitive in myself and wanted to do well for the uni. So it was something that I did, but with no real structure or guidance. And it wasn't until I kind of, well, then I moved to London and then didn't join a club and just joined the gym, ran kind of myself socially, went to lots of spin classes, circuit classes, that kind of thing, like just to keep fit. And then a colleague at work persuaded me to join the Clapham Chasers, which is the club I'm with now. So joined them and was probably just about a seasonal runner. I went in the summer to the track when it was sunny. I was like, oh, the track sounds as fun. And then it was through the club I met my coach. And I was kind of, training there, doing some of the 5Ks, the 10Ks that you've probably seen in my Power of 10. And then I had some friends entering the ballot for Berlin. So I was like, oh, I'll just go for it. Like my other half was doing it as well. So I kind of thought I probably won't get a space. Berlin's like a huge marathon. Everyone wants to do it. And then I did. And then at that point, my coach had kind of spoken to our club captain who heard that I'd got the spot for the marathon and was keen to help. So I was like, oh, well, I'll just go for it and see what happens. So that was my first then like real taste of having like a training plan that was designed for me for a specific event. And yeah, just really enjoyed it. And it kind of, I guess at that point, it came up to that kind of next level, especially after Berlin.
Yeah. Oh, isn't it crazy? It's like, that's the beauty of running. You've just had people around you. It's almost like right place, right time. They've encouraged you and almost, you know, said, look, just give it a go. And then you've bumped into your coach and what a story. What a story.
Yeah, I think everyone in the running community, as you said, like is so enthusiastic and keen to help each other. So I think that's what I had from Clapham Chasers. And when you see a lot of other people who are kind of really believe in you and want you to go for it, you're kind of then like, oh, well, maybe I should. So yeah, I owe a lot to, well, for my other half for kind of pushing me, because when we were dating as well, every weekend, I'd be like, oh, we're going to do this race. I'd be like, this is not a date.
I think it's, I feel like runners can recognize, you know, other runners with potential as well. So you can always, I feel like you can always see something in someone when they run and you'd be like, yeah, you know, if they, like you say, just had a bit more structure, a bit more guidance, they could be, you know, really push on to the next level.
Yeah. So yeah, I had a lot of help and it was good to have people encourage me along the way. But so over the last 2 years, it's just kind of snowballed and here we are.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, it's interesting. You kind of say that you didn't really have much structure, but like, yeah, we kind of did have a look for your Power 10, and the times you're running, even though you're racing probably 3-4 times a year, they're not exactly... they're not slow. They're like you're still churning out pretty fast times like during that period. So I guess did you ever think like, oh, I've kind of still got this talent for it, or I could push on if I wanted to, or you just not really think about it at all?
I was just more really competitive in myself. So I was always really keen to chip away, especially at that 5K. I wasn't thinking about or even aware of what really other people were doing. Yeah. I was more just focused on that, oh, this is what I ran last time, so this is what I want to run next time.
Yeah.
So I guess like I've always had that competitiveness in me. It's just never been, yeah, with the other runners. It's just always been in myself. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. See, I think a lot of people could probably relate to that, and I think that's what lots of people love about running is that you can have that competitive side just with yourself. Yeah. You've mentioned your coach Phil Kissy quite a lot. And you mentioned the group earlier. What does that actual setup look like then? I guess it's been different with COVID, but normally, like how many of you at the track at the time or at the road loop? Like, what does that sort of look like on a week by week basis?
Yeah. So we're all part of Clapham Chasers. So we're kind of a subgroup that have coached under Phil. And there is kind of varies each week depending who turns up. But there's usually between like 4 and 6 of us who train together in a group. Mm. So you've always got another 2 or 3 people at least to kind of push you on the sessions. And we'll have the kind of Dorito Tuesday speed session, which was always being done in the track, but I'm not actually used the track once in this block. I've not been on the track since last summer, so all my speed stuff was done in the road. And then on the Thursday we'll meet to do kind of longer tempo kind of reps, and again, like, that's just around Battersea Park in the same group. And I guess, yeah, having, I mean, we tend to be quite rigid on the Tuesday Thursday thing, because once everyone has it in their schedule, it just means you know you've got the same group always committed at the same time, so it's quite easy from that point of view. Occasionally we'll flex things if we've got we might add a kind of marathon pace as part of our long run on the weekend, so that kind of might change some of the sessions in the week. But generally, because everyone knows it's kind of Tuesday, Thursday, and then sometimes a Saturday or a Sunday every kind of few weeks, then there's a good group around. And they're all, not all of them are actually training for marathons. Some just do it for fun, just love the pain and the gain. And then some are training for halves, 10Ks, triathlons. So, but yeah, we're all like the same standard. I did used to train with Nick Balker and Matt Dickinson, but they've gone off. They're too fast for me now. Just see them in the distance.
Yeah. And then, also, like, give us like a typical week for you, because, you know, are you working full time now? Are you, you know, what's your plans going into Tokyo? Are you going to relax from work at all? Just give us like a typical week in what you do, like leading into that marathon, I guess.
Yeah. So I work 3 days a week for Lazard Asset Management. So I work there. We kind of scheduled those days around my training. So I work Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. Mm-hmm. And non-COVID, I did Monday and Tuesday in the office and Thursday from home. But now obviously everything's remote, so I'm at home all the time. And that won't change between now and the build up to Japan. I can't see the office being fully open for a while. And even then, I think I'll still have the flexibility to work from home. So I'm not going to change those hours. I'm going to keep working the 3 days a week. I quite enjoy the balance between the kind of training and working. I think it just helps keep me kind of focused, and sane, and not like constantly all consumed by running. Mm. So I think if I had more time to think and sit around, that just mean I'd be a bit bored, and just make my sessions a bigger deal than they need to be by overthinking them. So the work training balance works really well for me, and having the kind of the Wednesday and the Friday off does make such a difference. I'll continue doing that, and because everything's remote, I guess it just makes it that bit easier. There's no real changes that need to be made. My work have been really supportive, because I actually went reduced my hours after Valencia with the hope of doing the trials in April. Mm-hmm. And obviously that all changed things, but it works well. So I won't be a full-time athlete.
To be fair. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned your kind of mileage earlier, and you said it was almost quite low for someone of your level. Do you mind sharing like how much you do and kind of how that's split up across the week? If that's okay.
Yeah, so I had a 12-week build for Q. So as I was saying, it was a little bit shorter than I would have liked because of the ITB injury. Usually we try and have like probably another kind of 4 weeks on to that, just to account for any niggles, especially along the way. So over that 12 weeks, I actually like looked through my mileage after the race, and my average mileage over 12 weeks was 88 kilometers. So I was working case. So my highest mileage week was 110 kilometers. So that took place about 4 weeks out from the race, or 5 weeks out from the race. And then I started to kind of ease down. But on top of that, I'm still doing like 6-7 hours. This time round, it was all on the bike. Mm-hmm. Typically, I would have two swims in there as well. And would, as I was saying, usually do it on the elliptical around the bike. But I mean, the bike still worked well for me, and it was an easy setup having it at home. But yeah, Mondays are always a kind of non-impact day for me. So providing facilities stay open, that will be kind of a swim and a cross-train day. So it's quite good after the Sunday long run to have that day to kind of, yeah, act of recovery, I guess, and not run, but still aerobically get something and just get the muscles and joints moving. Tuesday, I'll always do kind of an easy cross-train in the morning, and then I'll go do a speed session in the evening, as well as gym work. Like strength and conditioning stuff. And then on Wednesday, it's another recovery day. So I'll do a cross train and a run. Thursday is our kind of tempo day. So yeah, we'll have like longer reps, and then I'll get up into the gym for strength and conditioning as well. And then Thursday is another recovery day. So I tend to do a swim and a run that day. I try and do two swims a week. I find the swimming, again, like it just be, could be like kind of a mental thing, but I just find it really therapeutic, and like, it kind of relaxes me physically and mentally. I think it just, yeah, it just makes me feel really, yeah, chilled out. So I really like getting them in. So I really miss them in this block, actually. And then Saturday will be kind of another run and cross train, and then Sundays are our long run day. So sometimes you might leave a long run to Saturday. It just depends on how hard the sessions are in the week. But yeah, the sessions we have can sometimes, especially in the latter stages of the marathon build, be quite meaty. So I guess doing the lower mileage and more cross training helps me bring, I find, more quality into those sessions, because my legs aren't knackered from just doing loads of miles. But everyone's different.
It's fascinating. We were speaking to Jake Smith about it, and I was like, does the cross training not tire you out as much? Because if you do say 2 hours on the bike, or like an hour and 90 minutes on the bike, it's fascinating that you can still feel fresh the next day. Like if it was me, I'd still feel knackered the next day.
But it depends on how hard you're going on the bike, right?
You're
going on the bike, this is the one thing I had to learn with Zwift was like, because especially on Zwift, it's like pops up being like, oh, you're hitting a segment, and I'd be like, oh, I'll just go for it. After I'm like, oh, I've been working really hard on the bike. So I actually use heart rate to make sure that I'm
right,
it is a recovery effort and I'm not just getting carried away. So having the heart rate there helps me know that I'm keeping it at the right zone, and not pushing on. Zwift have some like foundation sessions, so as long as your FTP and stuff's all set correct, I find those sessions really helpful, because for me, they push me into the right zone, but they also have like little intervals, so it helps the time go a bit quicker as well. Because that's one thing people don't like about cross training, is you kind of end up maybe clock watching a bit. Whereas if you're out running, it's the time goes a bit quicker, doesn't it?
Do you know what? I think it is the fact that you have it in your main program anyway. Then if you do pick up a niggle or an injury, it's not such a big ask just to keep that fitness, because you know what you're doing. You know the fitness you've got on the bike and stuff, and you know you're going to be fine when you come back running. Yeah. If you run all the time and you get injured, then it's like, oh my God, you know.
The world is about to end.
Yeah, like, literally, yeah.
No, that's another huge benefit, because when I had my ITB, obviously I was like, so upset I couldn't run, and like I was thinking about Olympic trials, and I was like, this is gonna be terrible, I don't know how long, like especially with that kind of injury, it's not like you need, you know exactly of the recovery process, how long it's going to take, it's just you have to just wait and see. So, and there was a few times where I'd taken like a month off, and then we tried to come back, and I find I'm quite hypersensitive, and this is something I'm really going to have to rein in for training up the Olympics, because I think it's going to be magnified. So it's kind of like giving everything on the bike, I proved to myself that it works. But as you see, like I didn't dread those cross training sessions, because I just had to do more of them, but I was already used to doing so much of it. And I was so fortunate at that time as well, the gyms were still open, so I was able to swim lots as well. So I wasn't just sitting in the spare room on the turbo the whole time. I was able to go to the gym and still do my strength and conditioning, use the pool. So with cross training, it's just about like, yeah, changing the environment you're doing it in as well. Like if you've got a turbo home, great. But like, if you're going to dread going on that turbo, go down to the gym if you can.
Yeah.
Or go outside if the weather's nice, especially now it's going to be sunnier. You can mix it up and make it interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I think we touched on it earlier, just with your build up for Tokyo, and you said you're kind of going to keep it similar. What does the rest of the plan look like then? You mentioned the camp. Like, is there going to be any races that you're going to do? Like maybe like shorter distances, or is it just going to be the training and pretty much that?
So I'd love to. It depends what races are on. Usually I try and do a half, and for Q, because there was nothing on, I just did a time trial. So right. I treated it like a race and I tapered down like I usually would. And that was quite good to have kind of a few down days anyway. And then I did it with a couple of my teammates. So around Battersea Park. So that was a good like effort. So I'm not sure at the moment. I don't think there'll be a half marathon race that works for our plan. And we might also be away, so it might be a case of doing that abroad, but that would be a very different effort because it'll be so hot. But I still would like to, and this is not the time probably for this goal, but I still really want to work on my 5 and 10k. So if there's a good race I could do in May, then hopefully I'll do a 5 or a 10 before we head out, and then if that fits in with the plan. But that was something that I could focus on in the autumn once we've got the marathon out of the way.
5th of June, British 10K champs.
No way. Doubling up, absolutely no way. I mean, I'd love to say that like I could, but it would be so hard.
Yeah, no, it would be. It would be brutal. It would be brutal. Yeah, look, I don't know if you've looked at the marathon course at all as well. There's not really much on it. I was trying to look at the course. They 3 laps, 1 large lap, 2 10K laps. And they said there's a slight sort of gradual incline for about 5K, but it only climbs like 100 feet over 5K. So I just didn't know if like you were going to train specifically, try and find as much information as you can, train specifically for the course, you know, given the humidity and stuff as well, obviously the warm weather training, or are you just going to try and get as fit as possible?
I think a combination of both. I'll definitely want to understand the elevation profile of the race, because if it's going to be hillier, then that's something we will need to kind of incorporate into training, because all the marathons I've done before have been super flat, all the training I've done before has been on flat surfaces. Although in saying that, when we were up in North Yorkshire, I did actually do a lot of my kind of easier runs on the country lanes, which were all kind of rolling. So, but I'm never doing like hill specific fast stuff. So yeah, I definitely will need to kind of get more information on the course and then discuss with my coach what he thinks about specific training towards that. But I feel like we've got the heat side of things covered, so
yeah
we definitely want to be as prepared as we can, so taking into account the course would be a smart thing to do.
100%. Yeah, and I think just I guess that goes like for all people listening as well, like the difference it makes over 26 miles, like the difference in the course. I think people might if you don't know about it as much might think it's just another marathon, but we've seen it kind of in the past at past champs, just how grueling it can be. I think particularly the Commonwealth Games in Australia, like we saw some like crazy results because of that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I guess that must be exciting, because I think it opens the field up to a lot more athletes, because not everyone can compete in those climates.
Yeah, exactly. It will be, it'd just be interesting to see how I hold up against the kind of heat. I mean, in the past, I've always thought that I kind of hold up quite well, but then I've never run a marathon in the heat, so that will be totally different than doing a training session maybe where it's stop start and you can pour water over you and just have a break in between intervals before you and mentally reset. So that will be good learning curve for me to see how I actually respond to it. But again, it was like the US Olympic trials, their course was really quite hilly in the end, and I think it took a lot of the runners by surprise. And maybe the ones you thought that would perform the best didn't. And that might not be down to the conditions. It might just be it wasn't their day. But it kind of does show you, you really need to pay attention to kind of everything and know what you're getting yourself into before you stand up on the start line, and yeah, be prepared for it. So we'll definitely be taking all that into account, and just, yeah, things like needing to work out. Obviously I won't have my coach there hand me my drinks, so need to practice picking them off a table and not out someone's hand. So all those things we'll need to factor in.
Yeah, no friends or family can go and watch, which is going to be, I wonder how that's going to affect, you know, a large number of athletes, you know, no friends, no family, no training partners, if you like, just people out there making you comfortable, you know, it's going to be, it could be, yeah, so.
It's be very different games, yeah, because we're just basically fly in and out, a couple of weeks before to adjust, but then as soon as your event's over, you're back on the plane home. I would have loved to travel to Japan.
They confirmed that.
Yeah, well, I think things are not like 100% confirmed. And it's classic COVID, isn't it? Everything can change. But the last I heard that it would be kind of like 2 or 3 days after you'll be back home. The men's marathon's a day after ours. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness, because I couldn't think of anything worse than like seeing them all do it and then be like, I've got to do that tomorrow. So hopefully then we'll be hobbling around and we can watch them. So fingers crossed we'll even be able to do that. I have no idea.
If that's the case, you should be able to catch the closing ceremony as well, because you're pretty much the last race, aren't you? The last event of the Olympics.
But it just depends where it is. Because if it's in Tokyo, we
My bad. Yeah, you're 500 miles away, aren't you? You're 500 miles.
So we might not be able to. And I don't think they'll be flying me down there for the podium. Yeah. So
just logistics and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you got, so this is almost like a fun question, actually. Have you got a marathon that you, maybe a major marathon that you is on like your bucket list next to, for example? You know, you've done Berlin, you've done London. Is there another one you're craving to do, or?
I would just love to do London again.
Really?
I really would love to do London again. Yeah. I think because it's like where I live and I have so many friends here and my family all came down. So like just seeing the people that you know so well around the course, and like some people like, they're just surprising you at points. You're like, oh, like I didn't even think you'd be here. Yeah. It was so good when I did it in 2019. I think for me, like I'm still kind of focused on the time rather than ticking off different places and other majors. So even though like I would love to do New York, it's obviously not one you'd maybe necessarily go to because it's not fast and flat. So in the future, yes, but it's not like I'm not champing at the bit to do it. So after the Olympics, we'll have to plan and see. And obviously next year's a big year as well with Commonwealths and Worlds. So I think the next couple of years could just be dictated by what teams I hopefully make.
Just like a trial, you got to hit the trials race, or you know, hit a certain standard, and
so we'll wait and see. But I definitely hope at some point I can fit in a marathon, so I can see where I can push my time.
Steph, thanks so much for coming on, and best of luck for the training, and then with the summer as well.
Thank you, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks Steph.
Thanks for listening, guys. We hope you enjoyed the podcast this week. As always, if you did, please leave us a rating and a review on your preferred podcast streaming service, as it really helps us out. If you've got any feedback about the pod, please send us an email, info@sundaypodcast.com, or tweet us or send us a message on Instagram. Both of those are @sundaypodcast. We're also really pleased to announce that you can now donate to us on Buy Me A Coffee. So if you feel like doing that, that would be much appreciated. Just let us know. And also for next week's pod, we're very pleased to say that we've got Chris Thompson, so the other winner of the marathon trials on the men's side. So that'll be next Sunday for you. So good one to look forward to. Cheers, guys.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.